We listen to Ronnie. Ronnie remembers, the oldies, the 50s and 60s.
And before she knew,
he kissed her tenderly. In Gilly Gilly, Ice and Pepper, Cats and Alan Bogan by the sea.
All right, now, ladies and gentlemen, you've heard us sing the whole thing right through. We want you to sing each and every word that Frankie sings. You ready? Here we go.
Well, we'll be singing along with Frankie a bit later on, because right now it's my pleasure to introduce an incredibly talented and versatile man who, for 60 years, has been the Four Lads' leader, manager, shining light, and keeper of the flame, always on guard to maintain the original sound and musical standards of this legendary group. Ladies and gentlemen, a well-deserved drum roll, even though it's pretty cheap because I can't afford a drum, for Frankie, or more formally, Frank Busseri.
That's some introduction. Though I did all those things.
To say that this is a popular group is really an understatement. They earned so many different gold singles, and of course the biggest one was Moments to Remember, and we're going to get to that, but we're going to kind of do most of the show chronologically. You didn't start out as the Four Lads. You actually started out as a group called the Otnarots?
Yeah, that's Toronto spelled backwards. That was kind of dumb. So when you're 15, 16 years old, it seems like a good idea.
Who were the members of the Otnarots?
Well, the original group.
But I've also read here that Rudy Malgieri and John Perkins were also at some point in a group with you.
Not John Perkins, but Rudy Malgieri was the original baritone singer with the group, and okay. He only lasted, 10 minutes, you know, maybe...
maybe 15.
Maybe 3 or 4 months, but then that's when I joined the group, and those two guys that you're talking about, they formed the Crew Cuts.
To a certain degree, the Crew Cuts were competitors, but your sound was different, though, really.
Oh, totally.
Who were the four founding members of the group?
Connie Cotterini, who was the bass singer. Myself, Frank Busseri, who was the baritone singer. Bernie Turish was the second tenor. And Jimmy Arnold was the lead tenor. He was the high voice.
Of the four members that you just mentioned, three of them are still alive?
Yes.
The only one that passed away was Jimmy Arnold?
Yes.
One of the things that's interesting is that you started out as being a baritone singer, and then you eventually became a bass singer.
Well, I chose that because, you're going to laugh, it's easier.
What's easier?
To sing the bass part.
Okay.
You know, you could get up in the morning and you'd have the low voice and you didn't have to worry about, you know, because a lot of times we did early shows because in those days there were theaters and so on and so forth. We did a lot of promo, high school assembly kind of things. But it just evolved that way that I moved to the bass part.
Were you members of a choir school at some point?
Yes, we were. We originally attended St. Michael's Cathedral Choir School in Toronto. That's where we met, and that's where we formed the group. St. Michael's Choir School was a private school of music, but along with the music subjects, you learned your regular school subjects. And we studied a lot of liturgical music, you know, church music, actually. And when we formed the group and started singing the kind of music we were singing, we got sort of frowned on by the director of the choir.
Oh, really?
So we did it in secret. We were only kidding around, really. We weren't intending to go into show business.
This was actually just kind of a lark at the very beginning? You just said you could have some fun.
Yeah. But as we got older and graduated from that school and everybody went to different high schools, we were still only young. I was around 16 or 17 at that time. We got a little bit serious, and we patterned ourselves after a group called the Golden Gate Quartet, a Negro spiritual group who was very successful in those days. They did a lot of movies and so on, and they came to Toronto, and we made our way backstage. I don't know how we did it, but we got backstage and met them, sang for them, and they were very impressed because we were copying their style.
Oh, wow.
But we were also singing the music of the day, you know, the pop songs of the day. So when they got back to New York, they informed their manager about us, and he gave us a call and asked us if we'd make a demonstration record, send it to him, which we did. And he liked it so much, he asked us if we wanted to come to New York and try a show business career. Well, we were all like, the oldest one in the group was 19. I was 17, and Jimmy and Bernie were 18, and Connie was 19.
Oh, Connie was the old man of the group back then.
Yeah, he was, yeah, right.
Okay. So you went...
We'll give it a shot. What do we got to lose? You know, if it doesn't work out, we'll come back and go to college or whatever.
You know, some of the Four Lads records, since you just mentioned the choir school, some of them you could see kind of a choir influence. Some of the Four Lads records could almost be church music because even though they were secular songs, the harmonies.
Well, not only that, but we did a lot of Gregorian chants. We've always been proud of our unison singing, and I think it's because of that.
Well, since you mentioned Gregorian chants, I just want to point out that back in the 50s, the heyday of the Four Lads, you guys were so popular. If you had put out a single of a Gregorian chant, it probably would have been a big hit.
I don't know about
you
could, that.
And then the flip side could have been the telephone directory, and that might have been the minor part of the hit.
It would have been fun to do that, though.
At some point, you met Mitch Miller.
Our manager and Mitch Miller were business associates, and when we went to New York in 1950... we auditioned at a club called the Rubon Blue. You know, the guy said, we're from Canada. This was a very posh East Side club, you know, in New York in those days. And he said, do you know any Canadian folk songs? We said, of course. We know. Are you kidding? We're from Canada. We didn't know a Canadian folk song from a polka, you know. So he said, okay, well, you open Tuesday, and we'll book you for 1 week and see how it goes.
Oh, gosh.
So we went out and we went to a very famous music store called Carl Fisher's and pulled up a couple of folk songs, Canadian boat songers, I don't know. And there was one French song we used to do when we were in the choir called Vive le Canadien.
Mm-hmm.
So we added those two to our repertoire and we opened. We ended up staying for 30 weeks.
Boy, you learned quickly, didn't you?
You had to, you know, that your backs were up against the wall.
You were the Four Lads at that time, weren't you?
Well, the name was given to us by the impresario of that particular club, because at the time we opened, we didn't have a name.
Oh, so he just, out of the blue, he just said, ladies and gentlemen, here are Four Lads?
No, he said, what shall we call the lads? And he said, oh, how about the Four Lads? You know, really, it was just like that. And we said, yeah, that's fine. We didn't care, you know, we wanted a job.
Yes.
So that's how the Four Lads name came about. During that period, our manager brought Mitch Miller in to see us. And he didn't feel that we were quite ready for recording. We sang okay, but we didn't have that sound that you immediately recognized. So in 1951, we were out of work. And whenever we were out of work, we went home. It wouldn't cost us anything, right?
Yep.
And we got a phone call from Mitch Miller, and he said, I got a new singer that I'm going to record, and I'd like you maybe to be his backup group. Would you
mm-hmm.
like to do that? And we said, of course. And the singer was Johnny Ray. And the next day, we went to New York, and Bernie, the second tenor, he was also our musical arranger vocally. He wrote the arrangement, and the first song that we ever recorded was Cry.
So let your hair down and go right on, baby, and cry.
Well, Cry was a number one record, and the flip side got to number two, and you were on that one as well, The Little White Cloud That Cried.
The little white cloud that sat right down and cried.
Record was an enormous hit. It was incredible.
Both sides. I mean,
and it was because of that record. Then they decided, oh wow! And we did a lot of personal appearances with Johnny.
Back in those days, on the original pressings of the single, were you identified as the Four Lads on the record?
It says Johnny Ray and the Four Lads.
your first appearance on a hit record was a record that got to number one and number two with the two respective sides.
Isn't that incredible?
Sure is, and it really wasn't quite on Columbia Records, right? Even though many people think it was on Columbia.
That was Columbia, but it was on the subsidiary called OK Records.
OK Records?
Yep.
Oh, okay. You actually started out on OK Records.
Our first record was a song called Turn Back.
Turn back, fool lover, turn back. Can't you see the danger threatening your youthful heart?
The record that followed Turn Back was The Mockingbird. Was The Mockingbird an original song, or is that one that went way back?
The Mockingbird was adapted, going back to Bernie again, arranger. He adapted that from Dvorak's New World Symphony.
Really?
Going home, da-da-dee-dee-dee.
Oh, wow.
Da-da-da-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee.
And he could do that because that was public domain.
Exactly, and that's how it came about. And then the second part of it, if you listen to the record, we did like a spiritual.
First version came out in 52, then you re-recorded it in 56?
You know, I don't remember when I know it was later on after.
Okay, but it was different, and we're going to get to that in a few moments. But the first record that I would like to play by the Four Lads in its entirety is one of my favorites. It came out in 1953. It's a little bit of a geography lesson, and it's called Istanbul, Not Constantinople. How did you get that song, and what was your reaction to it?
Well, that song was written by Nat Simon and Jack Kennedy. And that song was given to us by Mitch Miller, and they were categorized as novelty songs. And we just felt it would be kind of fun to do it when we recorded it. And Jimmy did his obligato, you know that part, da-da-da-da-da.
Yes.
He had to stand with his voice away from the microphone. It would blast so loud.
Oh, you mean his voice was overpowering everybody?
It was, yeah, because he had a very strong voice. You know, we didn't have the techniques that we have today.
Yes.
In those days. We sang everything on one microphone.
Right.
We had a 45-piece orchestra, and they recorded on one microphone for each section of the orchestra.
I see.
Today, they have one for each horn.
That's true. And then they could punch things in.
Do whatever. One guy's out of tune. Right. They put him in tune. He's not in tune. But I don't know.
But back then, everything had to be done in real time.
Oh, yeah.
This is a little history lesson that it used to be Constantinople, and now it's Istanbul.
Oh, yeah. It was Constantinople.
It was. These are the Four Lads. And by the way, this became your first top 10 hit in 1953.
Yeah.
The Four Lads and Istanbul, Not Constantinople.
Istanbul was Constantinople, now it's Istanbul, not Constantinople. Been a long time gone, old Constantinople, still a Turkish delight on a moonlit night. Every gal in Constantinople lives in Istanbul, not Constantinople. So if you've a date in Constantinople, she'll be waiting in Istanbul. Even old New York was once New Amsterdam. Why they changed it, I can't say.
People just liked it better that way.
Take me back to Constantinople. No, you can't go back to Constantinople. Now it's Istanbul, not Constantinople. Why did Constantinople get the works? That's nobody's business but the Turks.
Thank you. Liked it better that way.
Take me back to Constantinople. No, you can't go back to Constantinople. Now it's Istanbul, not Constantinople. Why did Constantinople get the works? That's nobody says that but the Turks. Istanbul.
If anybody wants to tell you that the town is called Constantinople, you just tell them it's a lot of Istanbul.
That got a tremendous amount of airplay. It got more airplay than what it sold. It sold a lot,
yeah.
But the airplay was phenomenal on that record.
Did you know that a modern rock group a few years ago revived the song? The group was called They Must Be Giants, and they did their own version of Istanbul.
Yes, I know, but their version is very similar to ours. It's done in a more rock style, but the actual format of how they do it,
right,
is the way we did it.
Now I'm going to get to a song. I know I'm going to love talking about this
now
one.
Now you're going to give me a headache.
You know what song I'm talking about.
Yes.
Well, I actually have a little introduction to the song, which I'll do in a moment, but let's tell people that the song is Gilly Gilly Ossin Pfeffer Cats and Ellen Bogen by the Sea.
Very good, Ronnie.
I had to practice this for like 2 days to get it. The song actually was written by a couple of songwriters that wrote a lot of serious songs. I believe it was Al Hoffman and Dick Manning wrote the song.
Yes, they wrote some great songs, like the Hawaiian Wedding song and a whole bunch.
Now, did they write this song for the Four Lads?
I think they had us in mind because of Istanbul, you know, the novelty. They also wrote Mersey Dotes and Dozy Dotes.
Did you have any reservations when you recorded this song? Did you say to yourself, you know, if this becomes a hit, we're going to be known as a novelty act?
No, actually, we thought it was fun, and we did it in the studio with a live audience. And it was just a lot of fun to have everybody join in and sing along with us. And the funny part about it is we started doing it again today. We're doing it in our act now. December 14th, we were doing a concert in Toronto, and five of my nieces and nephews were there. They ranged from like a year and a half to four. And I got them to come on the stage, which they did. And they were all well prepared because their parents had, you know, played this record for them and so on and so forth.
Oh, wow.
And they sat down on the stage with me and we sang Gilly Gilly Us. And they know every word of the song.
So now you're going to have to do it as long as you live, probably.
Well, it's okay. As long as you know what? If the people enjoy it and they have fun with it, that's what counts.
This is the song. You're going to hear Connie say, sing along with Frankie, right?
Right.
That's unusual because how many people that are members of a group actually, in one of their hit records, person's name is mentioned. Everybody knows Frankie's a member of the Four Lads.
How about that?
There's a crazy song with a crazy ring, and it has a title very hard to sing, but I love it so much that I will play it happily. It's Gilly Gilly Ossin Pfeffer Cats and Ellen Bogen by the Sea.
Hey, you want to join a group?
There's a tiny house.
There's a tiny house.
By a tiny stream.
By a tiny stream.
Where a lovely lass.
Where a lovely lass.
Had a lovely dream.
Had a lovely dream.
And the dream came true.
And the dream came true. Quite unexpectedly. In Gilly Gilly, Ossin Pfeffer, Cats and Ellen Bogen by the sea.
She was out one day.
She was out one day.
Where the tulips grow.
Where the tulips grow.
When a handsome lad.
When a handsome lad.
Stopped to say hello.
Stopped to say hello.
And before she knew.
And before she knew. He kissed her tenderly. In Gilly Gilly, Ossin Pfeffer, Cats and Ellen Bogen by the sea.
All right now, ladies and gentlemen, you've heard us sing the whole thing right through. We want you to sing each and every word that Frankie sings. You ready? Here we go.
There's a tiny house.
There's a tiny house.
By a tiny stream.
By a tiny stream.
Where a lovely lass.
Where a lovely lass.
Had a lovely dream.
Had a lovely dream.
And the dream came true.
And the dream came true. dream came true quite unexpectedly. In Gilly Gilly, out to Pepper, Cats and Alan Bogan by the sea.
She was out one day.
She was out one day.
Where the tulips grow.
Where the tulips grow.
When a handsome lad.
When a handsome lad.
Stopped to say hello.
Stopped to say hello.
And before she knew.
And before she knew. He kissed her tenderly. In Gilly Gilly, Ice and Pepper, Cats and Alan Bogan by the sea. The happy pair were married one Sunday afternoon. They left the church and ran away to spend their honeymoon.
In a tiny house.
In a tiny house.
By a tiny stream.
By a tiny stream.
Where the lovely lass.
Where the lovely lass.
Had a lovely dream.
Had a lovely dream.
And the last I heard.
And the last I heard.
So, can I become a fifth lad?
Sure, anytime. Very good, Ronnie. Very good. Well done.
Thank you. I'm Ronnie Allen, and I'm so pleased to be talking with the Frankie who is on that record. Actually, it's Frank Busseri. And we're moving right along. The thing about the Four Lads is that a lot of people think that 1955 is really the beginning of what's called the rock era. And before that, you had like the pop music era. And then before that, the big bands era, whatever. But the thing is, the Four Lads straddled both the pre-rock and the rock era. You had several hits prior to the start of the rock era, and then you had several hits going into the rock era. Now, the next one, just to prove that you were not merely a novelty act, you recorded this very serious song called Skokian. And you had competition on the chart with this, because Ralph Martiri, he had an instrumental version of the song.
Yes, he did.
But your version got to number 7. It's a South African song, I believe.
It's a South African folk song, and it was first recorded by the Bulawayo Rhythm Boys.
Yeah, and they were on the chart at the same time you were.
That record this, so we went in and recorded it, you know. It was one of those quickie deals where he said, come on, we had to go in the next day. Of all people who wrote the orchestra arrangement was Neil Hefti. You know what his track record is, Count Basie.
Incredible.
He's writing the arrangement for this cockamamie folk song.
Skokian, 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 Skokian. Oh, far away in Africa, happy, happy Africa. They sing a bingo, bango, bingo. They have a ball and really go. Skokian, Skokian, Skokian. Oh, take a trip to Africa. Any ship to Africa. Come on along and learn the lingo. Beside a jungle bungalow. Skokian, Skokian, Skokian. Hot drums are drumming, the hot strings are strumming, and warm lips are blissful, they're kissful of Skokian. Oh, let me go to Africa. Happy, happy Africa. You'll linger longer like a kingo. Right in the jungle on the
Skokie, 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 Skokian. Okie dokie, anybody can. Skokie, Skokie, man oh man oh man. You'll sing a bingo, bango, bingo. In okie pokie, Skokian. Skokian.
Oh, oh, far away in Africa. Africa. They sing a bingo, bango, bingo. They have a ball and really go. Oh,
take a trip to Africa. Any ship to Africa. Come on along and learn the lingo. Beside a jungle bungalow. Hot drums are drumming, the hot strings are strumming, and warm lips are blissful, they're kissful of Skokian.
Oh,
Africa. You'll linger longer like a kingo, right in the jungle on the low.
Skokian, 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 Skokian.
And that is spelled, by the way, if you want to Google it, it's S-K-O-K-I-A-A-N. We've pretty much covered part one of the Four Lads career, which is the pre-rock Four Lads. And the next one is the one that truly made your group, I would say, major stars. Moments to Remember.
Moments to Remember was written for Perry Como.
Really?
Robert Allen and Al Spillman, who were the writers of that song, they wrote a lot of stuff for Perry, like Home for the Holidays, stuff like that. And they brought it to his people, and they didn't like it. They turned it down.
Interesting.
So Robert Allen and Al Spillman brought it to Mitch Miller, and Mitch Miller said, oh, this would be great for the Four Lads. So, fine, we went in, and we recorded it. As it turned out, after the record session and the record was released, they released it as the B-side of the record.
So what was the A-side?
The A-side was a song called Dream On My Love. Pretty song. But we, the four of us, we just felt that Moment was the song. That was the hit.
Whose voice do you hear at the very beginning?
That's a girl by the name of Lois Winters. Lois was one of the Ray Charles singers.
Lois was the mystery female on that record?
Yes.
Because I've been wondering for years, and her name is Lois Winters?
Yes, she was a top group singer in New York City.
So she's going January to December at the very beginning?
We'll have Moments to Remember. Then in the middle, the girl who says the drive-in movie Where We Go, that's a girl by the name of Pat Kirby, who at that time was on the Steve Allen Tonight Show.
So there's actually two girls.
There's two girls.
So we want to give credit to Lois Winters and Pat Kirby. And, of course, there was also a group on the record. Who was the group? Oh, yes, the Four Lads. And, boy, this record was a smash hit, and we're going to listen to it right now, The Four Lads and Moments to Remember.
January to December, we'll have moments to remember.
The New Year's Eve, we did the town. The day we tore the goalpost down. We will have these moments to remember. The quiet walks, the noisy fun, the ballroom prize we almost won. We will have these moments to remember. Though summer turns to winter and the present disappears, will echo through the years. When other nights and other days may find us gone our separate ways, we will have these moments to
show.
We will have these moments to remember. Though summer turns to winter and the present disappears, the laughter we were glad to share will echo
may find us gone our separate ways. We will have these moments to remember.
Interesting thing about Perry Como turning down that song. 3 years after that, Perry Como recorded kind of a nostalgic song called Magic Moments. So I guess maybe if he had it to do over again, I wonder if Perry was kicking himself and saying, I could have had a huge hit.
You want to know the funny part? When that became such a big hit, Perry and the two writers of the song, I don't think spoke for a long time. Oh. Because unbeknownst to Perry, he didn't turn it down. His people turned it down. So he figured, oh, why didn't you, you know, I'm doing all these songs of yours. Why didn't you give me Moments to Remember?
It was really kind of the start of a new direction in your career. And the next one was called No Not Much. Was No Not Much written for the Four Lads?
Yes. We were in a car driving to Yonkers Racetrack. And Bob Allen, who was the music writer of the song, was with us going to the track. He says, you want to hear your next record? You know,
right.
Like we had nothing to say about it. So he sang No Not Much to us. Do you think that we said, oh, that stinks?
No.
That was an excellent song.
I don't want my arms around you, no, not much. I don't bless the day I found you, no, not much. I don't need you like the stars don't need the sky. I won't love you longer than the day.
Ronnie Allen, and I'm talking with Frank Busseri, who is the founding member of the Four Lads, who is doing this particular show with me, one of the founding members, one of the original Four Lads, and he's still performing. We're going to, at the end of the show, let you know who the members of the current Four Lads are. But in the meantime, we're going to get to another record which features you doing some lead singing, which is Standing on the Corner, from The Most Happy Fella, which was a very successful Broadway show by Frank Lesser.
Right.
I do remember you had some competition on the charts with this record.
Columbia was supposed to have an exclusive on, they had the show, you know, they put the album out for the show.
Right.
And they were supposed to have an exclusive on all the single records.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how, but the Dean Martin and the Mills Brothers... got a hold of it, or what they got that was given to them.
Dean Martin in particular is the one I was thinking of, and the interesting thing is when Dean Martin sang it, he changed it to Standing on a Corner.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he rewrote the song. He called it Standing on a Corner.
No wonder it did become a hit.
But in this record by the Four Lads, it's you doing the Saturday and I'm So Broke and all that stuff. And
Our record of No Not Much at the time was in the top 10.
Right.
And Mitch said, you got to come in and do this Standing on the Corner for Most Happy Fella and blah, blah, blah. And it's fine. It's a great song, you know.
Standing on the corner, watching all the girls go by. Standing on the corner, watching all the girls go by. You don't know a nicer occupation. Matter of fact, neither do I. Then standing on the corner, watching all the girls, watching all the girls, watching all the girls go by.
I'm a cat that got the creep. Main Street, and that's where I select my imaginary dish.
Standing on the corner, watching all the girls go by. Standing on the corner, giving all the girls the eye. Brother, if you've got a rich imagination, give it a whirl. Give it a try. Try standing on the corner, watching all the girls, watching all the girls, watching all the girls go by.
Saturday, and I'm so broke. Haven't got a girl, and that's no joke. Still I'm living like a millionaire when I take me down to Main Street. And I review the harem parading for me there.
Standing on the corner, watching all the girls go by. Standing on the corner, underneath the springtime sky. Brother, you can't go to jail for what you're thinking, or for the wolf. Look in your eye. You're only standing on the corner, watching all the girls, watching all the girls, watching all the girls.
From the year 1956, those mid-50s were really good for the Four Lads.
Yes, they were.
Standing on the Corner. I'm talking to Mr. Frank Busseri, who was doing the lead singing on that. Now, that stood the test of time pretty well. I've heard that song so many times over the years, and it's still such a happy song. I don't think they write Broadway show music the way they did back then.
No, it's a whole... The music has taken a totally different route. You know,
yes.
And, you know, some of the stuff that they do today, I don't even understand. I don't
yes.
know what it is.
It just seems that back in the old days of the great pop music hits, melody, tunes, catchy stuff that was in. And these days, if a song has a melody, oh, we're not going to play it. It has a melody. It's really weird.
God forbid we sang a lyric and we didn't pronounce it properly. Mitch would go bananas, you know.
Yeah.
What's the matter? You forget how to speak English?
Yeah. Was Mitch actually producing these records?
Yeah, he produced them all.
Okay, because in those days they used the term A&R man, and of course Mitch Miller's orchestra and stuff, but he was the producer of these records.
He was the producer, he was the A&R man.
He was everything.
Chose the material. Of course, if there was something we wanted to do, we could suggest it. Thought, okay, but if not, he had the final word.
I see.
Which was good, because when you got four guys, everybody has a different opinion.
That's true.
He was very strong in his decisions, and you can't argue with him. At one point, he had like 7 of the top 10 records.
I know.
You know, like with Tony Bennett and Johnny Mathis, right. And Doris Day, and blah,
yeah.
blah, blah.
Did you guys have to rehearse a lot to get the sound that you got?
We rehearsed all the time. Whenever we went into a studio, we were totally, completely, 100% prepared. And I'll tell you, like when we did Standing on the Corner, we always used to record from 7 o'clock in the evening to 10 o'clock at night. Those were the hours we'd like to record. When we did Standing on the Corner, that was the first song we recorded that evening, and it was 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank Lesser was to be at the session. That's what he did. It was his song, he was there. And so 7 o'clock, Mitch says, let's run it down once, you know, and to see the orchestra. And we had like about 45-piece orchestra, and the four of us. So we rehearsed it down once, and Mitch said, well, why don't we put one down on tape? We're waiting for Frank. We might as well utilize the time. So we went ahead, and we did it, and we finished doing it, and Mitch said, that's it. We said, what do you mean that's it? He says, you'll never do it any better.
Well,
Frank Lesser walked in about 5 minutes later, and he says, okay, let's get going. Mitch says, we're finished. But when he heard it, he was very happy.
Okay. So he wasn't kicking himself too hard for missing
yeah.
it. I'm going to play the flip side of Standing on the Corner, which I believe, on its own, might have been a top 10 record if it wasn't for the fact that Standing on the Corner got to number 3. As it was, My Little Angel got to number 22.
Well, My Little Angel was written by Bernie, a gentleman in our group. I think, actually, he wrote it for his wife.
Oh, who was his little angel.
He never said that, but I think that's what he did.
there's heaven in her eyes. And speaking of angels, I admit I'm a bit starry-eyed. For my little angel soon will walk down the aisle as my bride.
I'm going to get to a song right now, which is sometimes called the Paper of Pins and sometimes called the Bus Stop Song.
Right.
And it was from the movie Bus Stop, starring Marilyn Monroe. A Paper of Pins, is that an old song, or was it
written for... It was a folk song.
In other words, it wasn't written for the movie.
No, it was an adapted folk song that they utilized as the theme for that movie. I don't know why. All I knew is we did it for 20th Century, and they gave us a pretty good check.
I'll give to you a paper of pins, and that's the way our love begins. If you will marry me, 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 if you will marry me. I'll give to you a feathery bed with downy pillows for your head. If you will marry me, 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 if you will marry me. Everything, my house, my money, my wedding ring, and in the bargain I'll throw in me, if you will marry me. Everything, my house, my money, my wedding ring, and in the bargain I'll throw in me, if you will marry me.
The Four Lads and a Paper of Pins, and one of the things that amazes me about your group is your versatility. You could record novelties, you could record ballads, and you just do them all so effortlessly. This is just
thank you.
Unbelievable. And you had your own unique sound. The next one asked a musical question, but without a question mark. Who needs you? Who wrote it?
Same guy that wrote Moments to Remember and Know Not Much. Robert Allen, and the lyrics were written by Al Stillman.
Those seem to be pretty much your standard Four Lads ballad writers.
That's right. You're right.
Who Needs You got to number 9 on the chart back in 1957.
The answer is simply
I can't sleep all night. I've lost my appetite.
No appetite, no sleep at night.
Beneath you, I'd like to know.
Not a song that a lot of radio stations play these days. Of course, radio stations are going away, unfortunately, a lot from the 50s and even the 60s. But this is I Just Don't Know. And it did get to number 17 on the chart. Who wrote it?
Bob Allen and Al Stoneman.
Okay. But this one's not a ballad.
No. No.
Maybe they wrote it as I Just Don't Know. And then you sped it up, right? Is that the story? No?
No, I don't think so.
This was from 1957. And any particular thoughts on I Just Don't Know?
We did it with a big band, like a swing kind of big band.
Cool.
With the strings and the whole to do with the choir and the voice. And that was fun.
I just don't know, I just don't care, I just don't see me anywhere. Well, I'm a nowhere now since you and I ain't one. I just don't know, I just can't win. When you walked out, my blues walked in. Well, I'm a nowhere now since you and I ain't one.
Sunday might just as well be Monday. Don't care if it's day or night. 'Cause ever since you left, something ain't a going right.
I just don't know. I just don't know. So all alone, can't shake this wall. Well, I'm a nowhere now since you and I ain't one.
You and I.
You and I.
You and I.
You and I.
now to a song which became your final top 10 hit record, and it was from 1958, and it was called There's Only One of You. Was this by the same writers?
Yes.
I should ask, which ones did they not write? Well, they didn't write Standing on the Corner. You know? There's Only One of You.
I found a very clever song. The lyric to that song is very, very cleverly done.
This one got to number 10 on the chart, and coincidentally, it was your 10th top 40 hit in the rock era. These are the Four Lads.
Now there's 99 kinds of candy bars. Heaven knows there must be a billion stars. Lots of candy bars about a billion stars. But there's only one of you. There's an ample number of apple trees. 7 million fish in the seven seas. Lots of apple trees, more than seven seas. But there's only one of you. So tell me that you'll always care. And tell me your love is mine alone to share.
If you leave me, I'll be a lonely one.
Don't you know you're my one and only one?
Another mention by name, Connie Cotterini,
right,
who is the bass singer,
right,
and Bernie Tourish was the tenor, and Jimmy Arnold was the lead singer,
right,
and Frank Busseri, the baritone. Hit after hit after hit. We're going to go now to one called Enchanted Island. And is this another one that they wrote or not?
Yes, it is.
It is.
You tell you about Enchanted Island, which we recorded it in the wintertime in a snowstorm like you couldn't believe. And we went down to the studio and recorded this. Now, there was a blizzard out there. And here we're recording this beautiful Hawaiian song. We were wishing we were on an Enchanted Island.
We stand on an enchanted island.
more records to go, and this next one, I know, was not written by those guys, because we talked about it briefly earlier in the show, and this is a strange situation, because The Mockingbird, in the year 1952, became your first top 40 hit. In 1958, it became your last top 40 hit. It's amazing, with different versions of it.
See, I didn't know that.
It's like bookends. All of your top 40 hits came between The Mockingbird of 1952 and The Mockingbird of 1958.
I didn't like that.
We're going to let people listen to a little bit of the original Mockingbird from 1952, and then we're going to play the one from 1958. And the lyrics are slightly different.
They are?
Yes. Here's a little bit of what The Mockingbird sounded like in 1952. This is the Four Lads' original version on OK Records.
The
actually released in 1956, and it got to number 67 in 1956, and then it got re-released in 1958, but you didn't re-record it. This 58 hit is actually your 1956 recording, re-released and more successful. Very strange.
Yeah.
And it got to number 32 on the chart, and once again, with slightly different lyrics, these are the Four Lads with The Mockingbird. Record to go. We're going to close with it, and it's one that got to number 8 back in the year 1957. But before we do, I want to ask you, Frank, to tell us what you are presently doing and who the members of the
We're still doing concerts all over the country. We don't do a lot, but we do enough. We do the things we want to do, you know, and we do a lot of stuff with other groups also. We have a package called Moments to Remember, and it's with the Four Lads and the Four Aces and the Diamonds. We do that occasionally. We do all kinds of stuff. We do stuff with big bands like Glenn Miller Orchestra and Tex Beneke Orchestra.
Who are the current members of the Four Lads?
Aaron Bruce, who is now second tenor. He's been with me since 1974. Alan Sokoloff, who is the baritone singer, he's been with me since 1980. And Don Farrar, the lead singer, has been with me since 1983.
Well, Frank, this has been... To me, it's like I just went to oldies music heaven and I didn't have to die. It was just one of those wonderful things.
Yeah, I want to just say, Ronnie, it's been a pleasure for me, and it's so nice to be interviewed by somebody who knows what the heck they're talking about. It's a pleasure because you know exactly what happened.
We're going to close the show with the one that I left out. It peaked at number 8 and always been one of my favorite Four Lads song, such a happy song called Put a Light in the Window. And could you enlighten me a little bit on anything about this record?
Well, that was just another one of those songs that Mitch gave us, and there's really no story behind.
Who wrote it? It wasn't the same guys that wrote it.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't Robert Allen and Al Stillman, and it slips my mind.
Were they on vacation that week or something?
No, yeah, they were writing for the Four Aces.
They were writing for the... they probably did write some stuff for the Four Aces.
No, they didn't.
They never did?
No.
Oh, if they did, then you would have said, you're betraying us.
No, they were our guys.
And we're going to close on a very happy note. The legendary Four Lads with Put a Light in the Window.
Bye!
There's a house on the corner, on the corner of the street. In the house, you're the pretty, you're the pretty little gal who'll make my life complete. Tonight, tonight, put a light in the window to prove that you love me, let it shine. Tonight, tonight, put a light in the window. Tonight, tonight, I'm gonna make you mine. Gonna go, tell your mother, baby brother. You like I do. Tonight, tonight, put a light in the window to prove that you love me, let it shine. Tonight, tonight, put a light in the window. Tonight, tonight, I'm gonna make you mine. You pretty little gal, you're more than I deserve.
Remembers the oldies, the 50s and 60s.